You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello everyone, I'm Andrew Palmer and I work for AHDB as a knowledge exchange manager for the pork sector. Today I'm joined by Ed Bramham-Jones from the Norfolk Rivers Trust and also Rob McGregor from LSB Pigs. We're going to be talking about a cover crop trial, which is slightly different to some of the work that's been done already, as this time this includes an outdoor pig unit in its rotation or as part of the trial. Afternoon, Ed. Can I just ask you just to introduce yourself a little bit, please?
Hi, Andrew. Yeah, I'm Ed Bramham-Jones, Head of Farming and Water at Norfolk Rivers Trust. I work on the Water Sensitive Farming Initiative, working across Norfolk and parts of kind of West Suffolk into Cambridgeshire. So working, you know, one-to-one with farmers on soil and water related issues.
Thank you, Ed. And Rob, can I ask you to do the same for yourself, please?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, Andrew. I'm Rob McGregor. I'm the unit manager at LSB Pigs. I look after two outdoor units totaling 1,600 sows in North Norfolk. And we're an outdoor breeder currently producing 4-week weaned piglets for BQP.
Thank you, gentlemen. Just to give a little bit of an overview or background of the cover crop trial, this sort of stems from some work we've been doing in the East now for 3 or 4 years, which has been sort of nicknamed the Swaffham workshops, where we started to bring together outdoor pig producers and different water organisations, including, you know, like Ed's Norfolk Rivers Trust, Angular Water, Environment Agency, and also Natural England has also been involved. And bring producers together, start talking. And when we first started, we started looking at basic management, improving basic management of the soil and the sites of outdoor pigs. And as we've gone on through the years, we've started to develop and push the boundaries a little bit more regards to understanding a little bit more about environment legislation and also looking at protecting the soils, not just for the environment, but also improving the pigs on the site as well. So what's sort of built up over the years is, you know, there's been a general acceptance that grass swards is the best thing for pigs going on. And to this day, they probably are. But not everybody has a long leading time to establish a grass sward. So what we've done and as part of this trial work is to look at different covers that maybe we have a shorter establishment time before the pigs go on. So I'm going to come back to Eddie. Ed, can you just give us a little bit more of a background of the work, please, and the cover mixes, please?
You know, working collaboratively in a group with Rob, yourself at AHDB, Richard Barnes and Jim Egan at King's, and Fiona Wood at Angling Water, looking at different cover mixes that we could sow in the autumn after a cereal harvest, and then looking at moving the pigs on in the spring. And our main kind of aim really was to determine, you know, what would be a good cover mix that we could get established on fairly light soils, but also, you know, would there be a difference between the mixes in terms of establishment, persistence, obviously, with the pigs on site, and also looking at soil nutrient retention, because we're obviously very keen, you know, not to see nutrients leaving fields. So if it's from leaching, that, you know, potentially high nitrates getting into groundwater, or nitrates and things like phosphates through surface runoff. So looking at these mixes, and obviously there are other benefits as well in terms of, you know, from a soil health point of view, from a rooting, and also the pig production point of view as well.
Thank you. Can you just explain briefly the importance and the effect a grass sward has, or a sward, a cover sward of any description has on reducing surface runoff on an outdoor unit, especially now we're having these extreme winters now that are longer, wetter winters?
Yeah, so we're certainly, you know, after just coming off the back of one of the wettest winters on record, the great thing about any cover mixes is, you know, the fact that the soil itself is protected. So there's a a physical green cover there from the leaf, but also you've got the roots as well, which is binding together the soil, you know, holding together those particles, holding nutrients within that profile, you know, and also on some of these lighter soils as well, it's surface runoff from rain. We're also getting a lot of potential wind erosion as well. So just kind of helping with that soil structure and keeping it in place has a huge benefit.
Thank you, Ed. Could you just give us a little bit of a brief on the different mixes we've got on currently on trial at the moment at LSB, please?
Yeah, so we're working across kind of two sites, and on one of the sites, it's we've kind of split it into 8 hectare each areas. One that's got a grass mix, which is a more of a standard kind of pig mix that we've been using, a mix which has got species such as creeping red fescue, perennial ryegrass and late ryegrass is in it. And then the other mix here that we've gone for is a kind of more of a pollen and nectar mix. So it's actually called a fallow mix, but it's got ryegrass, vetch, bird's foot trefoil and red clover in it. And part of the thinking around that this is that you're obviously getting a different rooting system with the different plants such as vetches, and also looking at, you know, how those two different mixes cope with the pigs. You know, is there a difference in grazing and potential poaching as well? And we're also quite keen to look at having different, you know, potential pollinator species in there as well, because the pigs are obviously will graze and they will root, but there are a lot of areas across the field as well where there's a potential within the paddocks for, you know, these plants to come to flower, and especially, you know, lowing things like bird's foot trefoil. So if we can provide a multi-benefit, that's even better. Then on the other site, again, we've gone for the standard kind of grass mix, but then we're also trying another kind of, this is more of a herb mix. So it's got things like fescue in it, festolomium grass, but then we'll also put things like chicory, plantain, burnet and yarrow in it. So just to see again what the establishment and longevity is of these species. The second mix as well doesn't have any legumes in it either, so it was to see if there's any difference between non-legumes and legumes in terms of especially nitrogen, because, you know, the pigs can leave quite a high loading of nitrogen, and therefore we didn't really want to increase it maybe by adding in lots of legumes. So we can then compare the kind of fallow mix with the herb-based mix.
Thank you, Ed. Just to come across to you, Rob, as the man who's probably on the ground who's had to establish these mixes, how did you find the mixes regards to drill times and germinations, and how did they cope well over the winter with the wet winter?
Yep, okay. Well, they've all performed really well. We're happy with all the mixes and with regards establishment. We did take on the task of drilling them ourselves, which was a bit of a learning curve, mainly because obviously the ideal time to be drilling is a time when our landlord is very busy elsewhere. So we were not wanting to be held up post-harvest, waiting for him to be available, have time and then available to drill it. So we just cracked on and did it ourselves, which is a bit of a gamble, I suppose, as pig farmers, but the results have been really good. Yeah, we're very happy with it.
Have the pigs got a preference, or what we're looking like at the moment on this lovely spring afternoon at the moment?
I've got pigs grazing.
Grazing, that's what we like to hear, Rob. Are they enjoying the mixes, are they?
They are. They're loving it. At the moment, we've still got probably well over 90% green cover across the area. The only parts of the paddocks which are showing any signs of wear are the bits around the water tanks, out in front of the arcs and along the long troughs where we do the daily feeding. The paddocks, the dry sows are on blocks, so they tend to utilize the area totally. They wander around it and graze throughout the entire paddock. What we have seen on the service radial, which is more of a traditional clock face, if you like, with a with a hub in the centre. The sows spend a lot of time in between the arcs and the outer fence line where the troughs are, but the part of the paddock that runs in towards the hub gets less used. So what we've done, we've made a conscious effort. We've actually set the dry sow arcs a little bit further away from the feed troughs than we normally would have, as far towards the centre as is practical, really, in the hope that that'll encourage them to, well, basically just give them a larger area in which to spend their time.
Excellent. Am I right in your understanding, Rob, that you moved sort of earlier than you expected this year in January and February when it was a little bit wetter? Was the covers strong enough to cope with the machines at that time of the year?
Yeah, we have done things a little bit differently this year. We committed to doing things differently, partly because of the trial. Traditionally, we'd always move the pigs straight after harvest. So we were always looking at a September, October move. But obviously, we drilled and we wanted to give the grass and the cover crops as long a time as possible to establish before we started putting the pigs on. So we arranged with our landlord to do our first ever spring move. The only downside of that, it does put some pressure on us in the fact that the fields that were coming off are going to be put into sugar beet. And he was bound to be keen to have us out of the way so they can do their preparation, cultivation and sowing. So with a little bit of nervousness, I suppose, we didn't hang around very long in the new year. We started moving the pigs in January. We probably could have left it another 4 to 5 weeks, and as it turned out, done it more in February, March, because we had got out of the way of the sugar beet guys in plenty of time. So we probably did do a little bit of damage, especially at High House, one of the units where we've got the green cover, than we would have done. It was a bit damp, and there are also fields that we've never had the pigs on before. So I think we end up with a situation where when the land's been continually cropped in cereals for years and years and years, there's never any deep cultivation going on. So we seem to end up with this 7-8 inch of cultivated soil on top of something below it, which is pretty impermeable. Whereas the other unit, the land has had pigs on previously. So every time we come off, there is some deeper subsoil type breaking up done. And I think the ground, basically the fields, basically benefit from that having been done. So it may well be that if you're moving pigs onto green cover for the first time, then you're not having to just start thinking about it a year in advance, but possibly 2-3 years in advance, and start getting a bit of deeper cultivation in advance to prevent this sort of surface water logging that we've seen.
Yeah, thank you. Rob, you mentioned the conversations and the discussions you had with your landlord, you know, with reviewing the timings you actually moved. How critical and important are them relationships and discussions when working on a work like this or a project like this?
Yeah, they are absolutely essential, really. We were quite fortunate that our landlord had been observing other units close to us which had had success with green cover, and I think seeing the sites that were being handed back on that estate made our landlord think, well, you know, that he's going to have to make some compromises, but there may well be some real advantages to him as well. Aesthetically, the site looks so much better, but like Ed was saying earlier, if we can retain nutrients in the soil, that's a benefit to him. If we can prevent erosion by both wind and rain, then obviously from the point of view of the landlord, they're pretty attractive as well. So he was pretty easy to get on board, and hopefully we've shown this year by getting out of his way in plenty of time off the old sites, it's something that he'll be prepared to do again, and possibly, you know, take it even further.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob. To come back to you, Ed, I mentioned in the opening, you know, this work sort of started 4 or 5 years ago when we started the Swaffham workshops. Could you give us a little bit of an update from your view regards to how this work and previous work has got the more proactive work and conversations going regards to organisations like yourselves and the outdoor industry?
Yeah, so we've certainly seen, you know, positive moves over the last few years. And I think certainly, you know, coming together at those Swaffham meetings has been key to it, really. You know, I think everyone's, you know, trying to work in the same direction and, you know, focusing on, you know, trying to learn and understand the issues that are being literally thrown at us sometimes. And, you know, when we're getting these really intense rainfall kind of events, I think we're also finding as well that there are lots of challenges with, you know, like the landlord kind of tenant relationship and obviously short term tenancy. So we've always tried to be flexible in our approach in terms of advice and certainly some of the kind of grants and interventions that, you know, we've been using, which has come from sources such as, you know, WWF Coca-Cola partnerships and Tesco's, where we can, you know, look at putting in interventions such as silt traps, looking at gateway locations, bunding field corners, looking at larger buffer strips, and then also looking at, you know, kind of grass lays. And I think as well, we're starting to see, you know, kind of feedback as well from landlords as well around the kind of more collaborative approach can really have benefits to, you know, to kind of all of the businesses. And certainly something we're doing within the trial is to look at, you know, the monitoring side of it as well, is that hopefully some of that data will be useful for Rob's landlord as well, because, you know, he'll have soil data such as, you know, organic matters, you know, what soil biota is present, you know, nematodes, for example. So the likelihood is sugar beet will follow on. We'll then have more information to pass on there.
Lovely. Thank you, Ed. And just to come back to you, Rob, is it a little bit early to see if there's any difference regards to the surrounding biodiversity of the different mixes at all? Or hopefully we'll see that bit more in the summer, do you think?
I think it is probably a little bit early to make any judgments at the moment on that. There was a little bit of an improved, I suppose, growth rather than establishment in the areas where the clover was drilled. That's just a visual observation, really. But other than that, it's difficult to say.
Yeah, lovely. All right, thank you, Rob. So, gentlemen, if I can come to Ed first, what advice would you give to producers and landlords thinking of making this partnership or going along this same route as we've been discussing this afternoon?
Yeah, so I'd certainly kind of say kind of open conversations as early as you can and to start planning these things into the rotation so that there's enough time to get things established. Like, we certainly find, you know, as soon as the combine is leaving the field, if you're going to be going for a kind of autumn sown spring move, getting the mix in as quickly as you can really does pay off. I think looking at what's appropriate for the site and certainly the layout of a unit and where things are going is pretty key. And then kind of planning some of the more difficult sites, you know, can you actually look at larger buffers? Can that form part of maybe a longer stewardship scheme within the estate as well? So I think kind of collaborative, you know, open discussion and there's lots of benefits to both sides, we find.
Lovely. Thank you, Ed. If I could come to you, Rob, for the same question. What advice would you give to other producers who are thinking of going down this route of establishing of a cover or a sward before putting the pigs on, in terms of, you know, the discussions with the landlords like Ed's highlighted already?
Yeah, well, I think that landlord one is certainly one of the key things, because like I said earlier, it's not something you can just do in a single year. You have to really start thinking about it a little bit in advance, because certain fields are able to be put into grass within the rotation a lot easier than others. We've done okay this year, but I can already see that next year the fields that are going to become available early enough, so we're avoiding things like potatoes and carrots that are grown on the farm, where they're going to be able to put grass for us. It's going to mean we're ending up with the units a little bit fragmented, we're going to end up with several fields distance between the ones that have been able to be put into grass. So talking to the landlord, getting a plan, not just 12 months ahead, but probably 2-3 years ahead, really. So it can, yeah, over time, it will take a little bit of time, but you want it to, you want a plan, really.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you, Rob. And Rob, why did you get involved with the trial?
I think from a point of view of the farm, from us farming, a lot of it is down to welfare and the working environment and just the aesthetics of the unit. We've had, obviously, many, many years of moving pigs onto stubble, which within a very short period of time just reverts to bare earth. And to see pigs out on grass, I'm pretty certain there are advantages, certainly enrichment from the point of view of them grazing, but also I think having that amount of green forage going through their gut, definitely when they come into farrowing, it means problems which we used to see with constipation are far, far less likely to occur. I think it's certainly healthy on the nutrition of the animals. They're probably not getting very much nutritional benefit, but I think the fibre passing through them is definitely a benefit. But also just to create a much nicer place for us all to work. We're not dealing with soil blowing around like we were. It's a lot easier to take pride in a unit that looks the way ours do now with the green cover than it was in the past.
That's great, Rob. And just to finally finish off, and what's been the staff understanding of the trial? Or, you know, have they really seen the benefits in their own working environment and the benefits to the pigs, or is it just something they've just come accustomed to?
No, I think the staff really do see the advantages. They definitely like working in the paddocks when there's green cover. They seem to go to quite a bit of effort to try to keep it in the farrowing paddocks. We're in individual farrowing paddocks, and if they see a paddock that's losing its grass, it's always a bit of a sort of downer, really. They're enthusiastic to maintain that green cover. Some of them have also got quite accustomed to driving around on a topper and a mower in the summer, which I think is a choice job. And also, like I was saying earlier, we've drilled it ourselves as well, so we're taking on a few new jobs, and that's all, you know, keeps people interested. Bit of variety and variation in what people are doing is always good. So definitely they take pride in it and doing their best to help us look after it. I think one of the big things about it, where we've gone wrong in the past, is we've tried to establish grass, we've got it wrong and we've lost it, and there's nothing more it's pretty grim, really, when you've gone to all that trouble. There's expenditure, there's time and effort gone into it, and just because of the way we went about it, 6 months later, we're back on bare fields. If you're going to go to the effort of drilling it, then you've got to do everything you possibly can to make sure you retain it and look after it, and not just for 6 months, but throughout the winter, which is the challenge, and then into the following year. If you're on the site for 2 years, you want to see grass there right up until the day you move off, really.
Yeah, you do. Thank you, Rob. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Just to let the listeners know that we're hoping to be doing a follow-up article on this work in the upcoming months with an article in the Pig World magazine. And if I can say thank you very much for Rob and Ed for their time this afternoon, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the May 2021 edition of Pork Talk. The SPP has been steadily improving in recent weeks and is now around 144 pence per kilogram. The increase would be a welcome development for pig producers, although high feed prices continue to mean margins are a challenge. What does the outlook look like for the coming weeks and months? Pig supplies have tightened up relative to earlier in the year, with the backlog of pigs that had been held up on farm now abated. The backlog reduced quicker than we had previously expected, with the kill in March well above year earlier levels. The tightening supply should help to support prices. At the same time, there were some challenges with breeding herd performance late last year. This would also have helped clear the backlog, and again, suggest finished pig supplies are likely to be tighter than we had expected in quarter two, supporting the price outlook. Throughput is still expected to be above the low level recorded at this time last year, though. We've recently reviewed the pork production and trade forecast we produced in January, as well as looking at developments in international trade. Early in the year, import and export volumes both fell significantly. How these markets develop in the coming months will play a key role in the outlook for the British pork sector. The extent to which exports to the EU face ongoing difficulties remains to be seen. But on the plus side, import demand from Asia may be better than we had thought earlier in the year. Meanwhile, on the import side, we need to watch for how eating out volumes affect the demand for imported versus domestically produced pork. To view any of the areas I've covered, please visit the AHDB website. You can also go to the website to subscribe to our Pork Weekly and receive an update into your inbox every Friday.